Well, we want to start just with a couple of announcements this morning, and then we're going to spend most of our time in a panel question and answer session. We'd like to leave time at the end for questions from you as well. We've prepared a lot of questions that we know that have been asked many times by many of you to these guys in different forms. So we're going to do that. But before we do that, we just wanted to mention the global care team concept again. The care teams, Lee Morton is helping to coordinate that. And she mentioned to me yesterday that the care teams for these families here are now full. In fact, they're kind of bursting at the seams, which is great. But there are four other families who will be developing teams or are developing teams in the immediate future. So you can contact Lee for details if you're interested in being involved in a care team. Also, it's a good time to mention that given the fact that we're talking about sending into the world, we want to remember we have the Columbia trip that's coming up a little later in March, but also a trip planned for Engage Global in Minneapolis, what some of our folks went to before. It's a time where church members can learn more about the kinds of purposes that God has in the world that will be evidenced through the lives of these guys as they go out. So let me remind you, I know this may feel silly to most of you in the room, but let me just remind you of who everybody is up here. My name is Mike, and I'm one of the associate pastors here at the church. And then John and Hannah, and they have four children who will be going with them. And then Casey and Bree, they have two young boys. And then Zach and Madison have a new daughter. And Kellen and Jeremiah also have a little dude that they're going to be taking with them. So it's encouraging and challenging to have these four families now at this point of being sent out in the next 1 and 2 months. They've completed a multi-year training process with us. We've had the privilege as a church of investing in their lives in BTI and the pastoral residency and ETC and SAFIR or RADIUS training, the immersion training, certain seminary classes, part-time staff roles, and now they've worked through the process of raising up a partnership team. Many of you are a part of that, and praise God in what appeared to be a fairly painless process to me, at least. They're now ready to be sent, and so we're thankful for that. We're going to start by giving you a reminder via video and a picture, a map of the places where they're going to go. And this morning, we're not going to use country names for the sake of security and recording. But Jeremiah's going to start. We're going to show a video, and then he's going to introduce the country where they're headed, and then Zach will do the same to represent the other families up here.
Treasure awaits. I'll run with endurance. So yeah, that is the country that Kel and I will be serving in South Asia. And we go to the next photo. Here's the country, and specifically that is the city where we'll be in the country primarily. And those red dots right there are all the unreached people groups within this country. So we'll be starting in that city in the south, and then from there learning the majority language, and then we'll be prayerfully considering which unreached language we'll move to next. But briefly, that's our country. That's what it looks like. Thanks for watching the video. That video was from our vision trip that we got to go on. We're really privileged to be able to go on that. UBC allowed us to go. So thank you. And yeah, that's our country. And Zach will share the next country.
Yeah, so that's a little video of our vision trip to our country that the Joneses and Marinskys and us will, Lord willing, be going to later in April. And this is a map of that country, and it was fun. We did this with the kids first through fourth grade the other day, but we're just like, the green dots represent all the language groups that have access to the gospel. So all those dots represent different language groups. And in our country alone, there is 600 to 700 different language groups. But out of those, all those red dots represent entire language groups, entire cultures that are unreached with the gospel, and many of them are unengaged with the gospel. So either there's very few Christians there with limited access to the Bible, or there's no Christians and no access and no churches. And in this country, that last thing that you heard in that video was the call to prayer. And so this is one of the largest Muslim countries in the world. And it's a country of hundreds of millions of people that live in the oppression of this false religion with no hope of the gospel. And with the kids, we said, where do you think we should go? Green means they have the gospel, and red means they don't. I was like, should we go here? And they're like, no. I was like, should we go here? They're like, maybe. That's actually a really important island to consider going to. But where we hope to end up long term is on this island in this section, because there's not just a few red dots there, but all of their neighbors as well do not have access to the gospel in the scriptures, with churches, or with Christians. And so that's a little picture of our country and the need there. And one thing our agency mentioned is that the agency GSI, which we're going with, could send all of their global workers to this country for the next 10 years and still have language groups that need more workers, that don't have workers currently in them. And so we might be going to one of these dots. And same with the Griffiths, they might be going to one of those dots, but there are literally hundreds more. And so we are leaving, but we also recognize and encourage and hope that many, even from UBC, either from the youth or college or adults, would consider taking the gospel to these areas. And there's, a helpful quote that I remember hearing once where a man once said, red means go. And so we see all that red there, and we have to take the gospel there.
Thank you, Zach. Thanks, Jeremiah. So we often talk about a diagram that we show we call it the snake diagram, because you can see why, right? Like you figured that out. Good. I'm glad we're on the same page. But it illustrates the church planting process, and there are some designators up there that hopefully you will become more familiar with in time as you interact with these workers and hear more from us about the work that they're doing. You know, about 20 years ago, there was a group of us who created the concepts E1, E2, E3, and the E is actually a designator for equipping. So the fact is that the pre-field equipping that they've already done that we've talked about is what we think of as E1, equipping one. But the truth of the matter is, as a Christian, as a cross-cultural worker, equipping never stops. And so when they land in the country and begin learning the majority language in these places, that phase we call E2, equipping two. And that's when they'll be focused on the majority language, often have student visas, and will be preparing for, toward the end of that E2 time, equipping two time, to develop business identities to then move into what we call E3, which is equipping three. And that's the opportunity to invest in one of the languages where the gospel is not yet accessible. So that's one of the designators you hear in missions these days. And I would guess that a lot of people who use that don't even know where it came from or what it means. But when we talk about E1, we're talking about pre-field, E2, majority language, E3, equipping three, minority language context. So we've collected quite a number of questions that we're going to have our families answer, and then hopefully have time toward the end for you to ask other questions that may come to mind. So you can prepare those questions as we go. Hopefully we'll answer a lot of these for you. But Jeremiah, let's start with you, since you introduced that video. Why South Asia?
Yeah, as y'all saw that video, wow, there's a lot more people in here. As y'all saw that video, it's a pretty large city we'll be going to, and It's also a big world that we live in with a lot of need. So like, why South Asia? Why that particular country? We've been asking the question where for a long time. But we are particularly compelled to this country just because the great need and just the opportunity ahead of us. So as you saw the map with all the red dots, there's still, out of the 70 languages in that country, there's still 30 of them that still don't have a church or access to the gospel. And 30 languages, that can be overwhelming, but I guess another big number would be those 30 languages represent 105 million people within those 30 languages. So these language groups are large, and there's a lot of work that is needed. But there's also an opportunity ahead of us to go there. So we met a couple that were recruiting for this country, and GSI, our agency, doesn't have any workers in this country, or didn't before September. So we'll be the first team with our agency to go there. And we just found it a great opportunity to be able to add some leadership or some momentum to this country to be able to welcome other workers behind us. We'll be creating structures and different things to help other workers land better in our country and figure some things out on the front end. And we hope that there are workers that come behind us that are able to reach more of these languages. So is the need, the large people groups that are in this country, and then just the opportunity ahead of us has compelled us towards South Asia.
Thank you. And Casey, representing the other families up here, why Southeast Asia?
Yeah, so along similar lines to Kellen and Jeremiah, the need is immense in Southeast Asia. There are around 250 unreached language groups still in Southeast Asia, in the country we're going to. And so, like Zach was saying, there's so much work to be done to reach all these peoples with the gospel. And those groups make up tens of millions of people. So they're big groups. And then this country, like you heard, it has more Muslims in this country than any other country in the world. And so it is predominantly Muslim. And so these people, they will be born, they'll live, and they'll die. And a lot of them won't even have the chance to meet a Christian, let alone hear the gospel, walk into a church, read the Bible in their language. And so they need people going to them to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. But, I mean, there are similar needs, like you're hearing, around the world. So there were other ways that we decided to go here, us three. So one of them was GSI has been in this country for 15 years or more. And so they know how to operate in this country safely. And that just creates a lot of stability and good support for families, bigger families or growing families, which was appealing to us. And then if we're completely honest, the language is considered slightly easier for English speakers to learn. So the prospect of pushing through that majority language and getting out to these minority languages quicker was appealing.
I can't believe he said that out loud. You're not supposed to. So, John, as you think about going to a country with an easy language, we also get asked often, why are we sending you out with GSI in particular to these kinds of E3 contexts instead of another sending organization?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, you might think we first want to pick a country that we want to go to, but generally the council, when we're considering missions, is to pick an organization first and to understand the kinds of work they do, understand how they work, how some of their distinctives, so that in case, you know, in the long run, you have to change locations and contexts, you're happy with wherever you end up in that organization. So for most of us, I would assume we you know, prayerfully considered which organization we go with. And for all of us up here, there was just that desire to be in places where the gospel wasn't, where churches weren't. And those are places in the world that we're calling, you know, this kind of ends of the world, minority language context, where for most of us, for all of us in these circumstances, we have to go learn two languages. And so GSI is an organization that specializes and focuses all their efforts to do that exact work, to do the church planting work in those kinds of areas. And their leadership and their whole team is staffed with people that have actually have the field experience and have seen churches planted where there are none. So we feel really excited to receive their support and resources all and every step of the way, whether it's in language learning or homeschooling and raising kids on the field or discipling new believers and raising up, you know, elders in the church planting process.
Thank you. And Kellen, from a mom's perspective, as we think about you guys launching, actually you're launching first of everybody up here. There you go. As you think about going to a country like South Asia, is it dangerous to be a Christian there? How do you think about your Christian identity as a foreigner and then for local people as well?
Nobody is shocked that we will be Christians. It's very common overseas for people to just assume that all Americans are Christians, so that's not going to be new to them, and it's not going to add any particular danger. They expect it of us. Something that we pray often for, though, is for the people that we're going to. It would be really dangerous for them to become Christians. And so while it's expected for us, the people that we hope to share the gospel with will face a lot of social persecution, a lot of ostracization from society. And so for them in particular, it would be quite dangerous to become a Christian, and they really will have to count a lot of the costs. And so us as Americans, we don't really face much danger with that, but definitely be praying for the people we hope to share the gospel with, because they will face a lot of persecution for that.
Yeah, and as we think about, you've heard already mentioned that these guys are going to learn two languages. Many have asked, how long does it take to learn a language? And fortunately, over the course of time, over the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen a lot of improvement in the efficiency and effectiveness. Those are the two words I often use to talk about language learning. How effective and efficiently can you learn? Language learning is built around three really primary issues. It's built around building deep relationships with local people, having sufficient opportunities to speak, produce the language, and having sufficient opportunities to hear understandable speech. And that sounds simple on the surface, but in order to go through a process that is effective and efficient, you have to use activities in different levels in a sequence that allows that to really work well. So we estimate that learning a second language, even in Southeast Asia, believe it or not, is still a matter of potentially 3,000 hours of work. So I often think of that as, you know, getting your associate's degree plus some. And then when you move to a minority language context, there are a few added complexities to that. So we're talking about time frames between 2 and 4 years, typically. Sometimes a little longer, depending on the context. So think about the duplication of that, and you recognize that that's a sobering task and responsibility. So you can be praying for these workers as they very soon start investing the majority of their time in those kinds of hours. And Bree, I know as a mom taking two young kids with you to Southeast Asia, I hear their names are Buzz Lightyear and Woody. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
How do you both as parents manage to be involved in language learning? Because I know you both want to learn language, and we commend that idea. And then what do you do with the kids while you're learning?
Yeah, for sure. So because it's so important for both of us to be learning that language to a high proficiency, it's important for us to create those opportunities for one another through sharing homeschooling responsibilities and just caring for our kiddos. And a lot of the environments will have the opportunity to enroll them in a local school or preschooling programs while we're doing language helper sessions. And also in those environments, it's not only common, but expected for us to have house help, which will provide some of that childcare help as well while we're just learning in that season.
And Hannah, you and John have lived in one of these kind of contexts before. What do you envision doing for your kids' education?
Different places have different opportunities. Some people put their kids in international schools if that's an option. We have friends that do a hybrid of their kids go to a local school a couple hours a week for learning language and building relationships with kids their age. And then a majority of homeschool. And so thanks to a lot of wonderful homeschool families here at UBC that have given wonderful advice to John and I, we have found a great curriculum that I think will work well for our family, and we'll be homeschooling, and then hopefully also be able to put them in a local school if it works out. And are excited to homeschool the kids together. Excited to do life all day, every day with this guy. So, but we'll be learning language, and we also hope that the kids will be learning language right along with us. And we were talking about with Bethany and Brooks, our 9-year-old and 7-year-old, about possibly joining us in our tutoring classes. And they were really excited about that. And they've already been starting like Duolingo, and they've been trying to say words and stuff. So that's really, it's really exciting to see them excited about learning language, because it's important for them to then know what mom and dad are saying to our neighbors and stuff, and especially when we start sharing truth with them and stuff. So.
That's great. Thank you. And Madison, as a wife and mom, we know that in any of these contexts, especially women have to adjust in unique ways at times. And so just wondering how you're feeling about that adjustment, even adjustment in dress. I know it offends our independent American sensibilities to have to accommodate another culture. No offense to all of you out there, but it's a fact. So how are you thinking about that?
Yeah, as ambassadors of Christ, we want to love and respect the culture that we're going into. And that would be the goal, would be respectful and modest. And that looks different for their country and our country, and even just within our country, in the city, you know, for practically, like, we can get around with showing our arms and stuff, but if we go to a village, we would want to cover our arms, might even wear a scarf over our head. Certain things like burqas or hijabs are associated really strongly with a Muslim identity, so we would avoid that, and that would even confuse the locals. If, like, I walked in with a hijab, they'd be like, are you a Christian or a Muslim? And so we just would want to be respectful to honor the culture. I've been to a lot of Muslim countries before and just accidentally dressed very conservatively and had, like, old grandmas come up and be like, thank you so much for honoring us. Like, it means a lot. And so we want to use our Christian freedom to show love and honor, and that might require, you know, dying to ourselves and wearing really hot stuff when it's 110 degrees, but Christ's love compels us to do so.
Thank you. And John, as you think about that landing phase, the first period of time on the field when you're learning the majority language, how do you think about the connection to national and international churches potentially in the country?
Yeah, so you may hear us talk about going to places where there's no church, and yet in the first cities where we hope to spend the first 3 years or so, they're more in urban centers where you will come across potential international churches or domestic churches. And the advice and the counsel we receive from our organization is that we just learn our way into those contexts and environments, especially in the early months when we don't know anything that would be ever communicated in that local language in that church, is to get to a certain point in our language learning and proficiency so that when we attend a church, you know, we can understand what's taking place there. And understand what's being communicated, and also understand what it would mean for that kind of relationship in the long run, as we seek to maintain non-traditional, you know, missionary identities. So, like, we hope to go to places where, you know, it's much more strict and security is much more tighter. And sometimes in these local national churches, they have to register with the government, and therefore members are, you know, kind of marked in that way. And so just the counsel is to learn your way in, understand what's being communicated. Sometimes, sadly, these churches are wrought with prosperity gospel and immorality, and so just being careful and what that would look like, and also being prayerful to consider what those opportunities could look like for us to be a part in that first term, in that first city, to help the local believers there and partnerships like that.
Yeah, and in the meantime, many ask then, what does that mean practically for week-to-week life, church life? And our commitment as a local church has been to make sure that we continue to support these workers pastorally as they go. So I will be in regular communication with them, but also that they are in a position to be close to localized pastoral resources, some of them themselves, such that they're not isolated from shepherding care, even locally. And so our desire is to see them weekly meeting together to practice the functions of the life of the church. So preaching, praying, reading, seeing, singing God's word together. And they fortunately will have support on the receiving side for that purpose. So they will be practicing living like Christians with other families who are there or with one another as they go there. Kellen, these are long-term investments, and we're talking in many, many years. So when do you plan to come back to the U.S.? Is that going to be like Adoniram Judson 25 years from now?
We love that question because we haven't even left yet. Yeah, that's one of the great gifts of GSI is just the expertise that they have, and they've sent many people to go do this work, and there's been many trial and error before us, and so there's a recommendation of not coming back until we learn the first language to high proficiency, because so much can be lost in coming back, so much momentum from language learning, and so it's really recommended that until we have that first language down, barring any family emergencies or anything like that, not coming back for a home assignment. And so as they've shared, that can be anywhere from 2 to 4 years, which is a long time, but as we've said, we think it's worth the investment, and yeah, so.
Yeah, and as we think about learning that majority language and then getting to the place where at the end of that, you have to develop an identity away from student visa, so toward a business identity to be there. Bree, I know you're a person with a business degree and background, and I failed to mention that the last time we had a panel, so I wanted to make that clear. We're not sending people with no business experience. Do you already know what business you will establish as you finish the majority language? And if not, why not? And why establish a business anyway?
So the short answer to that is no, we don't. But that's strategic because as we're finishing up that first language and we discover where we'll be going in the second location, that E3 context, we'll be able to know what business opportunities make sense for that specific group. So that's to help employ, to get us to live among that people group and to create relationships so that we can be sharing the gospel with them. So that's a huge reason as to why creating the business, as well as being able to switch from a student or tourist visa over to a business visa, which is typically a lot longer, and gain long-term access to the country.
Good, yeah. And Jeremiah, same for you. You have a business degree. A lot of people have a misconception about what that business is. Like, is it just a facade? Does the business make money? Do you plan to use your business for your salary? What if you strike it rich? Like, what are you going to do then? That kind of stuff.
Man, if we strike it rich and make a fortune, maybe we'll make like a Shark Tank TV show or something there. I don't know. No, we want to start real businesses. Like, we don't want a facade or to be faking in any way. Could communicate distrust or with the government or with the locals. We want businesses that will actually add value to the places we are. Businesses that are like make sense there, but will add value, can employ locals, and we can invest more into the community. We won't take a salary from the business at all. We're thankful for our partners that we have and people from UBC and other churches, individuals supporting us, and we plan to continue on our support teams. But any income that comes from the business, we want to invest back into the community or into the business, and we are wanting to start businesses that are more lean in the startup, that are scalable, but we hope to one day leave that business with the church. The places we're going, they may not be able to have a pastor on staff at a church that is planted one day, but we hope to model well what it looks like to work hard in the business, but also to work hard in the church and to be faithful to both of them as they may. The elders we train up one day may have to do both as well. So that's kind of the businesses we're looking at.
Yeah, and one of the other key tasks in the church planting process, as you've heard, is Bible translation. Zach, I know you are interested in translation. You've taken some classes related to that. So how do you see yourself learning your way into Bible translation on the field?
Yeah, when you talk about Bible translation, you need to come at it with a serious perspective. Like, you're considering bringing the words of God into a new language. And getting that wrong has disastrous consequences. And so there is like a foundation level of learning the biblical languages that several of us have started out with that we have been equipped with here. But like John was saying, our organization has many teams that support us, and one of them is a Bible translation team that is full of people who have translated the Bible into minority languages before, as well as Hebrew and Greek scholars. And there is a 9-step process of going from a rough draft to a final where you're getting feedback from local people's understanding of that draft, as well as Greek scholars, like feedback on whether the translation you have is accurately representing the original scriptures. And so it's not something we're going at alone. And as we get closer to translating the Bible, that team is going to be doing further equipping for us through different workshops and trainings so that we're freshly prepared to do that work.
Good. Yeah, and another common question in the midst of all this, as we talk about their longevity on the field, many of you have asked, can church members and global care team members and family members visit them while they're there? And the short answer is yes. Okay. But we just want to stage those kind of visits in a coordinated way so that we are helping the families stay committed to the task. And so those visits are actually a reprieve and a refreshing opportunity for them. So we're going to work with you and ask you to work with us to help coordinate that process so that we really can maximize the benefit of those visits. Because you can imagine if every other week someone else in good intention wants to visit, it can be a lot to manage on the field side. So we're gonna work together on coordinating times and ways to do that. But the answer is yes. And we look forward. Won't it be a great joy for some of you guys to be able to travel to these places and watch them in the context of learning language and growing into that environment and seeing the Lord produce results there. Jeremiah, we've indicated and have just again, you know, as we travel to the places where you guys are, we'll have to be aware of the sensitivity of the context we're going to, even as visitors. How should we communicate with you guys while you're there? We know we have lots of media for communication now, which is great, but what advice would you give to us about how we communicate with you?
Yeah, as we talked about the security context and things like that, we don't want people to be fearful to reach out to us. So like if you are wanting to reach out to us, please do. The best way, there's an app called Signal that's secure messaging. It uses Wi-Fi, so it's not going to be lost with our local numbers or anything like that. So that app would be great to download to be able to text us encouragements and things like that. But there's also, I don't know if we have that picture to show. That's very small. You can't read that. We can get this to you, but there are some words that we're going to avoid when texting people back in the States or on calls and things like that. We're not going to use the word missionary. We're going to use the word worker or evangelizing. We'll say sharing or telling the story, things like that when communicating with us. Just because it's okay to be a Christian there, but we don't want to overtly use words that are communicate missionary activity and things like that that they don't want in their country. Because our identities will be business people that are Christians, that are faithful Christians, that, and then we'll continue on with our work from there. But we don't want to, compromise our identities and things like that. But don't be fearful to reach out to us. And please talk to our global care teams. If there's any confusion or things like that, if you want to reach out to us or kind of unsure how to or want to get started on Signal or whatnot. So.
Yeah, and we operate under the assumption that all communication is monitored, because the fact is that there have been many situations where we find out that communication has been monitored. So we just operate under that as a default assumption in the way that we communicate to avoid the kinds of flags that would appear in communication that would cause concern or raise concern. Madison, you and Zach both as nurses have probably the unenviable privilege of knowing too much about health issues. What are some of the big health challenges that you feel like you'll face while you're there?
Yeah, I think the biggest one would just be, and this depends on where you're at, and varies from their country to ours, but just the standard of care. There are places you can go, especially in cities, that have very high quality care. But just for routine things like a kid dislocates an elbow or pregnancy or childbirth, there's just a different level of quality a lot of times than the standards that we have here in the West. So that would probably be the biggest challenge. But then we each have unique challenges. Their country is one of the two countries in the world that still has active polio cases. Our country had a polio outbreak a few years ago. Mosquitoes are not the nice ones. They have all kinds of diseases. There's king cobras. You know, we could list on, but we just really need prayer and trust that if the Lord wants to keep us there, that he'll give us the strength and grace to carry on and push through even despite all those challenges.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch over time life become the new normal. Where you go, the Lord has given us a remarkable ability, not just our children, but us, to adapt and to adjust to contexts where he sends us. And that there's a settledness the Lord can provide in that. So it's encouraging to think about that. Casey, we've alluded to the fact through that long snake diagram that this is a long process. So how long should we expect all this to take?
Yeah, it may be helpful to throw up the snake diagram. So GSI is seeing this work take, they say, around 15 to 25 years. And so this is a long-term work. And it makes sense when you look at it. I mean, those first three dots we've been doing for the past 6 years. And the third dot we're about to do in about a month or two. But then you have to spend years learning a language. You have to start a business and get that off the ground while you're learning a second language. And then you're beginning to do Bible translation and Bible study curriculum. And Lord willing, when people come to faith, then you have to disciple them. And y'all know that takes time. Life change is slow oftentimes. And Lord willing, raise up elders, and that takes time, and get to the church where it's healthy and self-sufficient. So all of that just takes a lot of time. And that's really important for all of you to know that and have that expectation. Because whenever we get into, I don't know, year five or six, and y'all have been faithfully reading our email updates every month for all those years, and you see yet again, we're still learning language, just know that was the plan. It's going to be a long grind to work through all these languages and all the other things going on with it. And for you guys to be praying for us in that, that the Lord would bless our work. And that in the end, we would get to celebrate together that there is a church where there was no church.
That's great. Thank you, Casey. And Hannah, you guys, as I said, you've already lived in a country like this for multiple years. And we think about all of our family and friends here and family and friends in other places where you have support teams. What would you encourage them with in terms of their best ways for them to support you while you're on the field, to help you to stay the course even while you're on the field?
Yeah, so goodbyes are never easy. Sometimes I feel like my life is a life of goodbyes, but we will have eternity together with fellow sisters and brothers, so we have that to look forward to, even with the sad goodbyes during this life. But some of the really encouraging things that you can do for us is, you know, those words of affirmation of, like, we're so excited to see how the Lord has led you and how you're striving to be obedient to what he's called you to. That those words go a long way, and, of course, prayer. We have a fellow supporter that every Friday morning, he's going to be praying for us. And so every Friday morning, I think of that. And it's such a blessing and such an encouragement. And practical, like knowing our time zone and what time of day we're in. So we'll be like exactly 12 hours difference. And setting up those call or Zoom FaceTime times so that it works with our schedule. Might be like 6 in the morning or 5 in the morning for you, but it means a lot to us to be able to have that scheduled time to look forward to talk to family or friends. And then, what was my third point? Was that good? Yeah, prayer, words of affirmation, but we really appreciate all of y'all's encouragement that you've given already, and so thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it really, it does matter a lot when you're on the field to hear from people, even from afar. It really does. It matters. For people just to respond to your letters and say, hey, we're remembering you guys. We read this and we're remembering you. We're thinking about you. It does matter a lot. So as a quick fun question for everybody, remember the word fun, right? Like fun. What are you most excited? I got to remind myself of that too. What are you most excited about, just like popcorn style, from your specific context? Like, what's something you look forward to that may be sort of random or out of the box? John, you want
to
start?
Yeah, we agreed not to get serious here, so we're trying to be fun, to Mike's point. But I don't know if you saw in the video the smile on Mike's face when he was drinking from that coconut. And I'll just tell you, like, that's one of the things I'm excited for. I'm excited for coconuts, again, tropical coconuts in every form. And particularly, Chris will get me here. When we visited last summer, there's this, at a cafe, there was a coffee drink. And you might say this sounds gross, but it was cold brew mixed with coconut water. It was an iced coffee drink, and I cannot wait to have one of those again. I tried to do one of those here from, like, neighborhood Walmart, you know, like pouring coconut water, and it just was terrible. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, I love plants, and so I'm excited about the year-long growing season to garden and plants. And the locals are also very big into their potted plants and everything, so I'm excited about that.
If you saw the video of the market with the rainbow arrangement of fruit, I am so excited to have all that fresh fruit at our disposal.
If you know me, I love sitting outside on a patio. I love a good patio. And our house has just a small little patio up front, and it's the same temperature all year round. So I can sit out there all year round and invite our neighbors over or whatever and hang out. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about, like, what is that thing you're most excited about? And this, I couldn't think of the most, but this is, like, what just sticks out. There is a water park. Like, within 20 to 30 minutes of where we live. And it's probably not one you would take your kids to. But just the fact that it exists gives me, like, this excitement. There's one section of language learning that is water-related activities and words, and we will be spending our time at the water park after that, practicing how to say water.
I'm excited to learn just the interesting little cultural quirks that's just shocking. Like, when we were there, it was Mike's birthday, and they bought a birthday cake, and you're eating it, and all of a sudden there's just random chunks of cheese in the birthday cake. And so I'm just excited for those, like, random shocking things to come up.
I'm pumped to play some cricket. You saw some of that in the video there. I grew up playing baseball, so I hope there's some transferable skills. But every evening in our country, guys are out on the street just playing cricket, so I'm excited to join them.
I'm excited to explore our country and just get to be a tourist there and fall in love with it the way that the people there love it and get to see the mountains and hopefully escape from the heat every once in a while. So,
Yeah, that's good. Thank you, guys. So just to wind down our time and then give you opportunity to ask questions if you have any. Zach, as you reflect in some ways for the whole group, what are you going to miss most here at UBC?
Yeah, as we all think about that, the obvious answer just pops up. We look around at y'all and realize that we are going to be missing out seeing your faces every week. We'll be missing out spending time with our mentors and our friends. And even as we've been up in the balcony recently, because that's close to the nursing mother's room, I get to look out as we worship and see hundreds of faces of faithful Christians who have impacted me personally in growing closer to the Lord. Like you impact us, inform us, and help us get to heaven. And even at men's retreat, just being able to talk to other dads and ask for help. And prayer and things like that, we're going to miss having access to you and these relationships. And that looks different for all of us, but it's all serious for us that we will be missing you dearly.
And then, Kellen, to continue on in that direction, you have a lot of history here at the church. The church has had a big role in your life. So what would you want to say to the body about the investment they've made in you, as a representative of everyone here?
I mean, we could all say that the investment of UBC has truly been eternity-changing for us and life-changing. All of us have had multiple years being invested and poured into and loved by the people of UBC. I mean, for many of us, this is where we heard about this work, and our hearts were compelled by the Lord's calling to do this. And so I think you could probably never sum it up, but we're facing a lot of discouragement and trials ahead of us, but knowing that we have a faithful body like y'all behind us and putting that stamp of approval on us and even commissioning us today will be an encouragement for years to come, even in trials. And so know that even just today, y'all looking at us and saying that y'all are willing to send us out on your behalf is something that, we have no doubt, for many, many years will be something that helps us through many trials. And so we're just thankful for the years and years of investment you've put before us and even the years of encouragement and comfort that we have to look ahead to. So thank y'all.
Yeah, I hope you feel the uniqueness of the opportunity that you've invested in these workers being able to be representation of you all as they go into the field. That's a unique privilege that we have. Just a few minutes left, and I know our time is short, but do any of you have questions that we haven't answered that you'd like to ask? Yeah, so what are some biblical truths the Lord has helped you with or used in your life to help you war against, fight discouragement?
Yeah, I know for me personally and for Bree, 1 Peter has been huge for us, especially 1 Peter 1, 3 through 5. There you just see so clearly God who has held us from beginning to end, and he has us all the way in between. And he's not only just holding us, but he's also bringing us to an eternity with him, with an inheritance that's stored up for us. And so those realities, one, it's comforting to know that the Father's doing that in our lives, and that's what he's bringing us to, and it's secure. But then two, to know that that's what we have in eternity, and so we can not hold things so tightly here, because we have something stored up for us there.
Any other questions? Yeah. That's a good question because we're actually trying not to say them. So you noticed rightly. We're just gonna keep from saying it because we're recording, and so just want to keep that. Keep that sensitive, but it is a good question. Other questions?
Up top, Mike.
Yeah. 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 So are our own teams partnering together? Who will you guys work together with?
Yeah, we have a team of two other couples that are in our country that we'll be partnering with. But when we learn the majority language, we'll be doing that all together. But once we reach higher proficiency, we'll be making those long-term team decisions of who we'll be planting a church with later on. I think this group hopes to stay together, but things are subject to change, right, with how that could go long-term.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We will be working long-term with small teams, and given the fact that we all come from the same sending church, we are planning and praying and hoping that we would be able to have that opportunity after the first term as we locate into the unengaged group, but also taking the counsel of our agency to say, hold that, you know, loosely, understanding a lot can change, but yet planning and hoping and praying for that long-term. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we wondered if someone might ask that. How is the situation that's currently unfolding there in Iran going to impact our work?
I'll say this. I'm not flying through Qatar Airlines anymore. Last time we were flying when the U.S. bombed Iran's nuclear site, And our flights got canceled on the way back, but we were actually on the tarmac when that happened, and we're one of the last planes to fly out of Qatar to get to our country. But yeah, so we're going to fly on the opposite side of the world. We're going to fly probably through Japan. That's how it affects us.
Any thought, Jeremiah, any other thought?
Yeah, we're going to use wisdom right now, like that. But in country, I was talking to my teammate this morning, and there have been some things in our country that have been stirring up. So we're going to avoid large crowds and things like that. When we were in Western Asia during training, there were protests and things like that, and we used wisdom and avoided them. But yeah, there are some real conflicts in our countries, but they're not, our agency won't send us to a war-torn country where we're like likely to be in danger and things like that. But we'll avoid crowds and be wise as we deal with in these countries and things like that. But there are real conflicts like that where people have some passion that will let it out, but we'll avoid crowds where things are getting stirred up and things.
Yeah, and we have a contingency team that helps monitor those kinds of situations to give input to, so that's helpful. Any other final questions? One more? Yeah, Sam. Yeah, so in the context of communication, how do we account for the Bible itself in what you send, right? Like, do you send Bible? Do you send words that are obviously related to the scriptures? Somebody want to tackle that? John, how'd you guys, you were in a sensitive place for 5 years, very sensitive. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I hope this matches how y'all have been communicating, but if I always point people to the two secure channels of communication, so our secure email addresses, often on a Proton Mail account, or Signal, those direct messaging apps. And, you know, one of the things is, it's like Kellen mentioned, it's not illegal for us to be Christians there. And certainly we don't want to hide the fact that, you know, we have a church back home that we've been a part of that loves us dearly and cares for us and wants to contribute to our spiritual good. And so, like, we actually, in a way, want to be able to hear all that through the secure communication. So I would just encourage to share in those secure communications, quote scripture. And in a way, we'll be able to boast in y'all back here saying, there's a whole church back home that's loving and caring and praying for our success here in every way. And so that's, I don't know if anyone else would add to the kind of thing, but if it's in those secure communications, video calls are a little different. You know, you'll have to just, you know, if we're on a video call, that's where, like, you know, we'll be able to help you understand what that could look like on a call. And so,
yeah, and you'll want to hear from each worker family how comfortable they are with that, especially quoting directly from the scriptures. And or, you know, there, every app out there, including WhatsApp, which a lot of people use, or GroupMe, they claim to be usually end-to-end encrypted. But we don't tend to trust many of those. So we try to stay with the ones John's mentioned. And I think it would be helpful for you to ask the family you're interacting with how they would like for you to handle that kind of communication. Maybe one more question. I know our time's up. If somebody has one more, we'll take it. And if not, we'll pray. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here with us. This is an encouragement to all of us here, and we look forward to the time. We have a prayer together as well this morning. So let me pray, and we'll close our time.